Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst-case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Karlik disaster. Here's what you need to know. The uncharted territories and remote Inuit people of the Arctic continent had allured white men on daring expeditions for years when explorer and anthropologist Vilhelmur Stefansson received funding from the Canadian government for an expedition to the High Arctic, a region in the Beaufort Sea. Eager to continue his Arctic studies and possibly discover new land, Stefansson gathered his crew and vessel, the Karlik, a 29-year-old wooden whaler, which had been retired for years. Stefansson bought it at a bargain price of a mere $10,000. Originally built for the fishing industry in California, the word Karlik means fish. The ship was not equipped for the polar seas and went through a series of repairs. The Karlik left Victoria, British Columbia on June 17, 1913, with 10 scientists, 13 crew members, 4 Inuit hunters, 1 seamstress and her 2 children, 1 passenger, and 40-some dogs aboard. Polar explorer Robert Bartlett captained the ship, which traveled alongside 2 other vessels of the expedition, Mary Sachs and Alaska. On July 27th, the expedition crossed the Arctic Circle, passing through the Bering Strait and entering the vast Arctic Ocean. Many of the crew members were inexperienced young men, and they stood in awe as the ship passed walruses, seals, and polar bears. Instead of taking the cautious approach of sticking close to shore, as the Mary Sachs and Alaska did, the Karlik ventured offshore. 1913 was one of the worst years for ice ever recorded in the Western Arctic, and the ship was soon trapped in the ice, drifting further off course. On September 20th, Stephenson, three crew members, and two hunters left the ship to hunt for caribou, taking with them a portion of the food supplies, ammunition, and dogs. For the next several months, the Karlik drifted westward in the ice as the 22 men, one woman, and two children aboard rationed supplies. As the vessel filled with water, Bartlett remained aboard playing records, ending with Chopin's funeral march before climbing out of the ship just before it sank into the depths of the ocean. The stranded expedition members built an igloo and a shelter made of packing cases on the drifting ice they named Shipwreck Camp. Captain Bartlett hoped his crew could gather strength before marching to Wrangel Island in February, when there would be longer daylight hours. In the meantime, he sent a trail-breaking group to scout Wrangel Island. The party of four, Charles Barker, John Brady, Edmund Golightly, and Alexander Anderson, would never reunite with their expedition, and their bodies were found 10 years later. Meanwhile, scientists McKay, Murray, Beauchat, and seaman Stanley Morris announced they wished to strike out on their own, writing a letter to Bartlett absolving the captain of his responsibilities to them. Their bodies were never recovered, and it was assumed the four were crushed by ice or had fallen through it. Bartlett and the remaining expedition members traveled 100 miles through the ice before stopping at Wrangel Island. While he initially planned to lead the group to Siberia, most members were too weak to continue, so Bartlett and the Inuit hunter Kataktavik journeyed 700 miles to Siberia and the Bering Strait. Upon arriving at the end of April, Bartlett had to wait until the end of May for a ship that would sail back to Alaska, where he could wire government officials to begin a search for the castaways. Suffering from severe swelling in his legs and feet from the perilous travels, Bartlett finally reunited with his fellow survivors. Three men had died on Wrangel Island since February, with the remaining 12 expedition members surviving off of roots and hunted duck, seals, and walruses. Fun facts, aka death stats. Of the 31 expedition members, 11 died. Four men died after splitting from Captain Bartlett's party and struggling independently across the ice. The lost men were Alistair McKay, Henry Beauchat, James Murray, and Stanley Morris. Another four men, Alex Anderson, Charles Barker, John Brady, and A. Golightly, sent ahead by Bartlett, died on the Arctic island. Their fate was not discovered until 11 years later in 1924, when Captain Lewis Lane discovered their remains. While waiting for the rescue, another three men died. Geologist George Malik and his assistant Bjarn Mammen died of nephritis, likely due to a starvation diet based on faulty pemmican. Seaman Breddy died of a gunshot wound, probably self-inflicted, but there is some suggestion of manslaughter, as Breddy had been accused of stealing food from the others. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Ahoy.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Brr, it's cold. I want to go home.
And it's just the three of us today. It's mm-hmm. We're keeping it in house.
Can we plug
family
our
affair?
Own, yes. Can we plug our own Twitter accounts? Or
yes, you can. You clearly want to plug your own Twitter account.
Well, I mean, I like to goof off on Twitter and social media. So sure. I've usually the guests get to plug that. So
okay. Well, but if you do that, then you have to tell us what's recently been alarming you.
Oh.
Okay.
That's the deal.
It's okay. A lot of pressure.
So follow Chris at @SmithChris on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Chris, what's been keeping you up at night? And, what's recently alarming you?
And Chris Smith Smith on
Instagram.
Instagram.
Chris Smith Smith on Instagram. Okay. It's a high maintenance guest we have here.
Okay, cool. What's recently been alarming me? Like a little bit of everything, I would say. Mm-hmm. I mean, what hasn't been alarming me, I guess, is the bigger question.
You have to answer this like truthfully.
Oh, okay. I was doing
No bits.
Okay, what has been alarming me recently?
And you know, preferably in 30 seconds.
Oh, jeez. This is actually a tough question. I'm a pretty laid back guy. I'll tell you what.
You know what's alarming me? That Chris has no cares in the world.
You know wow. what? You know what? Here's my issue. Somebody asked me how I was doing the other day, and I said, great. And then they were like, wow, I don't usually do great. And then I was thinking why I answered that way. And it was, I'll tell you why. We have a new Rover app. Then we have somebody go and walk our dogs because Rebecca and I are both working at the moment. So we have somebody go and take care of our dogs. And if my dogs are cared for, my dogs are such a source of stress for me.
Yeah.
And I guess my alarm is that, okay, so my dogs, when they're taken care of, I'm great. And when I know my dogs are home alone for long periods of time, I'm really stressed. But that's not my alarm. My alarm is like, I need to not worry so much about the dogs.
Sure. They're your babies.
They really are my babies.
They're also dogs.
Mm-hmm. They're also dogs. But, you know, there's a fine line between a dog and a best friend.
I thought you were going to say a baby, but yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
I just care so much about them.
He cares about his friends.
That concerns me because, like, is my heart in the right place? Should I be caring more about actual humans?
Mm-hmm. Do you have more do you feel like you worry as much about, like, me, one of your best, most wonderful friends?
Yeah.
As you do the dogs?
Do you worry when Clayton is home alone? I'll answer that. Oh,
are you
going to
send Rover over
to
take me out?
I'll be real talk. I do worry about all my friends. I do think about all my friends, but not as much as I think about my dogs.
Okay.
So if you're talking about concern in terms of length of time, like if you were to say always thinking about his dogs and start a stopwatch and then like take all those little stopwatch cues
at add up the time
and add
yeah.
up the time, mm-hmm. it's going to be more Bronco and Yogi than Clay.
That's fine. That's fair. That's fair.
But the degree of concern changes, you know, it's a different kind of concern
it's
I have
good.
For you, Clayton.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
I'm not going to ask about me, but we'll move on. I want to transition into this topic because I can't believe that we've never heard of this disaster. Mm-hmm. And also the extent of which, like, how things went wrong is just, I mean, what these people went through is wild.
Yeah. It feels like there's seasons of this disaster. You know, it's like,
yes,
yeah.
It goes on for so
it's
long.
So long. And yeah. Then, you know what I'm thinking about? The fact that they're in the Arctic and it's the cold.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there. It's not like they're there in the summer. They're not summer in the Arctic. Mm-mm. It's nope. Winter in the Arctic.
It's like winter and then less winter.
Yeah, and the lack of daylight.
Right.
Not only are you lost.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you're hoping to get saved, but you're also in complete darkness, and for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. This is one of those things where you're like, oh, these are actual humans just like me in a situation. And I was thinking about this the other day. I have a 5-degree window of comfortability. It's like 68 to 73.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything higher than that or lower than that, I'm making adjustments.
Sure.
I'm getting up. I'm changing the thermostat. I'm putting on a sweatshirt. I'm changing the environment in some way that I can. And then you think about something like this and this period of time of being and having to survive in these conditions. And you're just like, wow.
There were no thermostats in 1910, at least not on a ship in the Arctic.
That would be funny, though, because when they make that igloo and they get off the boat, it'd be funny if they installed a thermostat. They're like, okay, here, guys, if it gets a little cold, just turn the heat.
They have their nest.
Just knock out a block of ice, let some wind in.
Okay, so this is like, it's wild. So the ship is off, stuck because of some icebergs. And it's, you know, it's being carried through mm-hmm. the ice.
Mm-hmm. Right. No control.
There's no control.
They're just at the will of the ice in the ocean at this point.
It's Jesus take the wheel, but icebergs take the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
The shipboard group occupied themselves with hunting for meat and making winter clothing. Clearly, they're mm-hmm. going to need. Thank God they brought that the seamstress.
Right?
Crazy.
Wow.
Lucky I mean, or smart.
She's the only woman, and she survived with her kids.
As she should. Good. I mean, it is amazing. It's like, was she there just because they thought they might need to like sew up a
bundle
hole in their
up,
socks?
Maybe?
Or were they like, oh, we might need someone to make winter clothes? Like,
well,
is that common?
I'm not sure. Maybe Chris, if you could look that up, was it common to bring a seamstress aboard a ship when you're exploring at that
the
time?
Arctic, yeah.
Seems wild now, but honestly. Maybe not. Maybe they knew something we should be traveling. Maybe we should be traveling with seamstresses.
I will look that up. But just so you know how my fact-finding expedition started, I typed into the DuckDuckGo bar and I typed google.coppum.
Great.
So now I'm on Google.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look up, good. Is it common to bring a seamstress onto a hunting or
expedition. And try, you know, 1900s.
That should get you right to the source.
Yeah. So it had not been previously issued. And according to one report, 12 scientists and officers had only, they only had 9 bowls, 7 mugs, and 10 seats between them. There's 12 of them. Oh, 9 bowls, 7 mugs, 10 seats between two people need to be standing the whole
it's like that. It's like that improv game where only one person can lay down, one person can sit, one
mm-hmm,
person can stand.
Mm-hmm.
This is not right. So let's start off by putting poor planning, even though bringing along the seamstress was good planning, but everything else seemed poor. Let's also put up Captain Robert Bartlett up on the board.
Okay.
This is according to Professor Janice Cavell. In March and April 1913, Stephenson met Bartlett's former commander, Robert Perry, who strongly recommended Bartlett on the grounds that Bartlett would always obey orders without question. To the press, Stephenson reported that Bartlett is a man who is not afraid of hurting his ship and not eager to save it at the expense of the expedition. He goes cheerfully into such a hazard. After Stephenson arrived in Victoria on June 7, Bartlett told the press that Carlick was a good ice ship. She cannot stand ramming ice at full speed, but will go into ice as far as she can break her way. His real feelings, however, were revealed in a letter to Robert Perry. He raged that the ship was rotten as a pear and gave a detailed list of its defects. His report to Ottawa had merely given the government the impression that he had cold feet. The ship had never come back, but Bartlett was determined to do all I can. It's the new land or bust. Ooh, let's put that. New land or bust.
New
up
land
on the board.
Or bust.
Oh, yeah.
I'll continue. Bartlett's behavior can be explained by nothing except orders from Stephenson not to abandon the ship while it was still afloat. Certainly his own ambitions must have played some part. Indeed, he later admitted that after Carlick had survived a few months in the pack, he began to hope that their adventure would end successfully with books and lectures and a lot other money-making products. So he was in it for, you know, this is just me now speculating. I feel like he was in it for the story that would then yield, I don't know, his big book.
Money.
Right? Money.
We're seeing capitalism. We're seeing a book idea.
I'm just going to put capitalism on the
Searching.
This is going to make a great story.
Yeah,
you know,
what is that? It's like
that friend,
search.
We all have that friend who is like, well, this is going to make a great story. Let's have an epic night. And you're just like, dude, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Can we go to bed?
Chris
at 10?
Is worried about his dogs. He doesn't have time for this.
My
stuff.
Dogs
are alone at home.
If you want to go home, walk them.
What would you call that? It's not like is it like a hero complex or like
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Hero complex is great, but there's also like that it's like something about like searching, like putting yourself not dangerous, but like risky situations.
Tempting fate. But if the nature of it is that you're doing it because it's exciting glory. In the glory of doing it. It's like,
I don't even thrill think
seekers?
He,
is well, this a thrill seeker?
From what I'm reading from this excerpt, what I'm gleaning from it is that he wasn't even in it because he like wanted to be like, oh, the challenge.
Sure.
Like it was more just like the story. It's like, for me, it's like those friends who put themselves in awkward situations, who like meet a person and like then like, you know, I mean, we have to, you know, you meet someone at a restaurant and they're just like, come along, you know, like we're going to go to this other bar. And you're just like, yeah, like hopping on.
So maybe I mean, it's just like
that's a milder version of this, but
like a lack of alarmism or like lack of caution, you know, it's like, how do you put that?
This is throwing caution to the wind, but in this case, it's throwing caution to the ice.
Throwing caution to the Arctic.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we put it down as story seekers?
Okay.
We'll know what that means.
It's all of that, what we just said, listeners.
Yeah.
So just remember.
And again, he's the captain. He's the one who's leading this exploration. So, okay. Now let's read about the expedition leader, Stephenson. Professor Janice Cavell also said, after the Prime Minister, Robert Borden, had agreed that Canada would become the expedition's sole sponsor, Stephenson remarked to a reporter that if his ship became caught in the ice on the northern voyage, nothing could be done except to let it drift. So he knew. Stephenson had purchased the Karlik, an old whaler. The Karlik, Stephenson freely admitted, was not built to withstand the pressure of ice on such a passage, and it might be wrecked. So he already...
So we should put the Karlik up, I guess, right?
Yeah, the Karlik was a...
And Stephenson's the one who bought it.
Right.
Bartlett was the captain. Stephenson purchased the boat.
So Stephenson, she's up too.
You got to kick the tires.
Yeah. In that event, he thought the men could simply travel back to their base over the ice. So if it got wrecked, they'll just get back to the base.
Just get on the ice.
Stephenson, in an interview with the Toronto Globe on June 18, 1913, said, "So fully has the government entered into the true aims of exploration that they have specifically provided in a letter of instructions that the attainment of the purpose of the expedition is more important than bringing back safe of the ship on which it sails." Okay. This means that while every reasonable precaution will be taken to safeguard the lives of the party, it is realized both by the backers of the expedition and the members of it that even the lives of the party are secondary in the accomplishment of the work.
Which is just to like discover new land.
Yeah. Yes.
But then if you all die and you can't get back to tell about it, then nobody knows about the new land.
It's a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it.
They'll just be like, oh, no, they must have found the good land because they never came back. So send more expeditioners. They're having a great old time up there in the Arctic.
I do think at this time there was this attitude and culture around the spirit of adventure. I just think they thought of risk-taking differently than we do these days because, you know, I don't know, they're just different. They don't have the sort of safety. They're built differently, and they come from different stock. And travel and survival is more sort of baked into their just overall life experience.
Yeah.
I guess the modern version of this, you know, because we know all the land, basically. Like, we have satellite of everything on the planet. But so I guess the modern day version of that is all of our space exploration, right?
Right.
Which
oh, yeah.
You could argue we do, you know, we have so much technology now and there's so many safety protocols. But like, people go up to space and die. Like, that happens.
That totally right. happens.
So I guess that's what it is, right? And we don't think about that. We're not like, why are people going into space? We're like, that's amazing.
Well, it is. If you think about it, we're always exploring, right?
Right.
As humans, or at least of this time, these past centuries. Mm-hmm. We're always exploring, you know, whether it was the Americas that we were, you know, trying to get to.
Quote, discovery. Right.
Discovery. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at this. Now it's here.
No one's here before us.
It just disappeared.
Never mind the massive populations and cities that already exist.
Yes, yes. The whole, like...
Whoa.
This is wild to me.
Look at this. And nobody's even here. What about the hordes of people that greeted your boat?
Massive civilizations that were there. No. We found it.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that was done and the colonizers realized how profitable it was, they're like, well, where can we go? We need to go either to the south. We need to go to Antarctica or we have to go to the north.
But again, you make a good point because there were Inuit people that were already there.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not really about discovery. It's about applying, you know, I guess, what would you say? Like just, I don't know, figuring out where to put the next mall.
Yeah. Or just dominance. You know, you want to expand your territory so you have more land and you're more powerful globally.
Right. And I guess that's what's the difference between back then and today, or exploring land on Earth as opposed to land in space.
Until they figure out how to live in Mars.
And they're
and then it's like, the United States is going to claim Mars. And so now we have Mars to go to.
And it's like the same pattern, right? Because you already have like the Elon Musks of the world being like, yeah, we're going to build a space station and colonize it. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's all about exploration and philanthropy. But no, it's just that's a money making project.
Yeah, right money. There.
Everyone wants to be the first place to live on Mars, right?
Yeah. Well, let's encompass that by how can we encompass that? Like other than capitalism.
No,
right?
I want to say no chill.
No chill. Like, okay.
Chill. Humans have no chill because essentially what that is it's just like, look, we got this land. It's right here. Let's just chill.
It's greed, right? It's like, mm-hmm. it's greed. Maybe this will help us. So I also want to put up a geographical fantasy up on the board. Again, this is Professor Janice Cavell. To properly understand the decisions that led to the disaster, it is necessary to consider the life stories and ambitions of Stephenson and Bartlett. They each felt an intense craving for accomplishment and fame, and they believed in the theory that there was an undiscovered Arctic continent north of the Beaufort Sea. Dazzled by the hope of finding this new land, they took excessive risks. It is then not really a question of whether the expedition leader or the ship's captain was the mere culpable Rather, the key fact is that Stephenson and Bartlett were both allured by the same false geographical theory and by the prospect of lasting fame that it seemed to hold out to them.
So there you go. It was, you know, the curiosity, basically. Was there land up there? Mm-hmm. Is there anything we can do with it?
Is that a saying, curiosity killed the cat? Mm-hmm. Or did I make
curiosity
that
killed no. the garlic. Yeah.
The curiosity killed the garlic. Can we put curiosity up on the board? I mean, I would not want to send curiosity
no,
up
right.
to you.
No. But yeah. I know what you're saying.
That is the generous kind of interpretation of what was going on. You know what I mean? And also what you can say about all these NASA scientists who are like, what's going on up in space? It's, you know, the quest for knowledge, man's quest for knowledge. Yes, yes.
But that's one thing. It doesn't feel like that's what they were doing. They're just like, look, we got to figure out what's up in the Arctic and we don't care if people die. We don't care if this ship goes down.
It's almost like the humans getting handsy thing that we've talked about, except for we're not like manhandling animals. It's just like our, I guess, a sense of entitlement to.
Hmm. Right. Gimme, gimme. It's like a gimme attitude.
Right.
gimme that land.
Mm-hmm. I see land, gimme.
Yeah, I just want to be on it. I want to be close to it. Yeah. I want to be near it.
People already on it. Move away. Gimme.
Gimme. It's mineies. It's mine. Oh. And I put my little flag. Ooh.
Our flag obsession.
Look at this. It's a big
blanket. It's like that phrase, you know, like... look with your eyes, not with your hands kind of thing, you know, because like we can't help ourselves. Yeah. Like we see something beautiful and we just got to kind of like get in there just instead of just like looking at it and be like, wow, that's beautiful. I'm going to leave it alone.
Oh, so can we put that up on the board?
How do you, wait, which one?
I mean,
it's still humans getting handsy.
Yeah,
I
it is
really
humans
feel
getting
like
handsy.
We've trademarked that.
Yeah.
And I really like that about the alarmist.
But I like what, how you've added the metaphor you've added to it.
Yeah.
That's very specific. And yeah.
Sure.
So let's put, also, we have to put the Karlik up on the board, the actual boat.
The actual boat.
Again.
Oh, that's on there. I got it.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, again, according to Professor Janice Cavell. Extensive repairs had been made to the Karlik, and the dockyard officials considered the ship was good enough for ordinary work in the Arctic. Knowing what Stephenson's actual plans were, Bartlett was hardly reassured. A telegram warned that Bartlett considered the ship absolutely unsuitable to remain winter in the ice. Stephenson evidently said the Karlik had wintered in the Arctic before, which was true, and that it would likely return south in the autumn of 1931, which was not true. Jennifer Niven from the Ice Master said, "Her decks were cluttered and soiled, piled high with drums of coal oil and cartons of supplies and ropes and bags of large skin boats. Underneath this was disorganization. The ship's wood was stained, weathered, and warped in places, and the decks creaked when the men walked about. She was far from the powerful Arctic ice vessel many of the men had expected. As Chief Engineer John Monroe noted, her engine was nothing but an old coffee pot."
Mm-hmm.
"But there was no other vessel to replace the Karlik. She was the cheapest and the readiest ship available, and as far as Stephenson was concerned, she would do just fine."
I mean, that's just like negligence, right? It's like, now I just feel like you wouldn't, if you would just wait until you could build a bigger ship, you know, you would think with like safety protocols of modern times, if you wouldn't just find the cheapest ship that was not appropriate and be like, well, this is the best thing we got right now, so we're going to uncharted territories that this thing probably isn't equipped for.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know what it is? It's like being like, okay, well, I gotta get to New York from California. New York, I gotta drive. Let me see, what can I buy in an hour? and then like just get the buy that, like, you know, 1980, you know.
Well, when we first moved to LA, we called it the Nugget. We bought a Saturn,
yes,
SL2, and it was the
which
guy
they don't make anymore.
No, for good reason.
We brought it to the mechanic, and he was just like, "Okay, it's fine, but," he goes, "drive it like an old man." That's what he said. And
it didn't have a radio. It had no air.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, you know, I'll just drive this.
Yeah, it's
I'll
fine.
Hope for the best.
We're going to hope for the best, but don't, you know, don't take it up to the Arctic and try and take it on an expedition.
Right.
If
you're going
do
on
bring
roads,
along a seamstress, at least.
At least you went on, like, you know, a paved highway that has, you know,
right,
resources and stops along the way. So if something goes wrong, you're not just like abandoned,
right?
Yeah,
nowhere.
That's true.
There's an expression, the right tool for the right job. My dad's always saying that. So maybe mm-hmm. this is the wrong tool. The Karlik was the wrong tool.
Oh, I love that.
For the wrong job.
The Karlik, wrong tool for the wrong job. All right.
Sure.
We'll put that up on the board next to the Karlik. I also want to put up on the board inexperienced crew.
Yeah.
Jennifer Niven, again from the Ice Master, wrote, "There hadn't been time enough to search out the best candidates. Besides, the pay, 10 British pounds per month, was meager. So the crew of the Karlik was for the most part made up of boys without any real experience or practical trade, attracted by the adventure and expedition promised and whatever money they could get. Bartlett worried about their inexperience, their backgrounds, and their character. None, as far as he knew, had ever set foot on Arctic snow, ice, or snow. Not one of them had ever been trained in surviving the elements, and Stephenson, in a perpetual rush to accommodate the swift deadline of the Canadian government, disgracefully had offered no such training."
You know what made me think of that, or what I thought about while you were saying that? These guys who were out for adventure and expedition, if they had as many streaming services available to them as we have today, they probably would be perfectly content and just sit back and be entertained with life, but they were bored. I think it was just a boring time to be a human being. And they were like, "Get me out of here. I want to go on an adventure."
Sure.
And so that was the spirit of adventure, basically.
So you blame spirit of adventure.
I don't blame the spirit of adventure. I blame the lack of Netflix at the time.
Lack
There's
of entertainment.
There's a few things that had to happen before we got there, yeah.
This is a tough one because it's like spirit of adventure.
Which is a good thing, right?
It is a good thing, right? So this is how, I guess, progress happens, you know, curiosity. Again, similar to curiosity.
Yeah, it's a double, it's sort of a...
But this is the bad side.
Yeah.
You know how like they say like with every good thing, there's a bad side.
Yes.
Maybe it's just my therapist who says that. but, you know, my therapist is huge about, you know, there's a good and a bad to every single thing. Even the best, the things that you think are the best things, there's always a bad to them. And sometimes you just have to kind of like accept it.
Yeah.
And bring it along with you.
We call that the tax. When we have friends or people in our lives who you're just like, I like this person. It's just sometimes they do this. Well, that's just sort of the tax you have to pay to like hang out with them.
Mm-hmm. Like your dogs, for example, you love them, but you do have to pick up their poop with your own hands every day. That's the tax.
Exactly. And you have to worry about getting someone to walk them while you're at work.
Exactly.
That's the tax. So why are we talking about this?
We're talking about curiosity is essentially a good thing. Curiosity is essentially a good thing, but there's a tax. There's a curiosity tax.
Yeah, the tax that comes with curiosity or curiosity tax?
Yeah, we're just talking about tax. We're just talking about risk is what we're talking about.
But also, you know, these inexperienced guys, the fact that they were provided with no training.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this kind of, it's like, if you're going to do something that's like uncharted, unprecedented,
yeah,
there at least should be a conversation. You don't figure it out on the fly.
Exactly.
At least a plan. Just
show them how to slingshot works or something. I mean, like.
I mean, this is how little they care.
How about basic training? Put that up on lack of basic training.
Lack of basic training. But this is how little the captain and the expedition leader cared about their. It's a lack of caring for your employees too, and we've seen that before.
We have.
I put. I have negligence, but I can put like a little lack of care for employees, right?
Uh huh.
I think it also just seems like a rush job. You know, like there's no reason.
Ooh, rush job.
I love a rush job. I hate a rush job, but I love it for the board.
For the board. Put it on the board.
And finally, before we start crossing things off, we should put the Canadian government up on the board.
Oh, Canada.
Canada.
More like Canada.
Canada. The Canadian government. Jennifer Niven from the Ice Master wrote, the American Museum of Natural History and the National Geographic Society had allotted $45,000 to the expedition. This sum was too little to carry out Stephenson's ambitious plans, so he traveled to Ottawa in February of 1913 to seek additional assistance from the Canadian government, which offered to take over the operation completely with interest in asserting Canada's sovereignty. In relinquishing its obligation to back the expedition, the National Geographic Society was empathetic on one point.
Was emphatic.
Oh, sorry. Emphatic on one point. The different word. The exploration, as financed by the Canadian government, must begin in May or June of 1913. So putting a deadline to it.
Mm.
Otherwise, the society would once again have claim over the expedition and would send them north the following year. The Canadian government did not want to lose this grand venture. Thus, in April of 1913, Stephenson found himself short of time. The show must go on mentality, perhaps? We just talked about this.
Yes.
Right.
Well, it was also the deadline put on by the National Geographic Society. So maybe we blame them. They're the one who set the deadline. The Canadian government agreed to it, but the National Geographic Society said it.
Well, it looks like the Canadian government was going to give them more money. So that was more of the captain and the exploration leaders being like, well, we can get more money if we can leave before June.
Right.
Oh, I see.
You know?
So they rushed it to get that cash.
So rush job. That sort of fits under rush job.
Yeah. And also the show must, yeah, well, this one for some reason, it's not the show must go on mentality because, but it kind of is, because when I think of the show must go on mentality, I think of how futile it is. It's like, mm-hmm. Do we really need to see a show? Like, if you didn't do the show, how necessary? I mean, I don't want to, like, I know we love our art and any, mm-hmm. you know.
there's certain things that could happen where the show must go on because that's fine.
Like a surgery, maybe. Yeah. you know, just a natural disaster, you know, is happening. And so we must do something about it. Mm-hmm. A show, not necessary. Also, an exploration that no one's asking for to the Arctic. It feels like you can wait a year.
That's fair.
I mean, I guess back to Chris's point, these people, if they were truly just like young and bored and like their life expectancy was much shorter, they're like, but this is all I have to live for. I might as well just go. Maybe it made life more exciting. Than just sitting around waiting another year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's...
You know, this makes me feel like, other than the seamstress, we got to get some gender diversity in there.
Agreed.
You think a woman would have made a better decision in this? Is this what you're saying?
I don't know, but at least it wouldn't all have been the same mentality. They would have maybe brought up a few questions.
Interesting. Right. Mentality. Interesting.
Ew.
Right, we needed some more womentality.
We need womentality. Or
my brain is exploding.
Non-binary tality.
There you go. So,
but honestly, anything a different
any tality.
Any tality. a plethora of talities, not just the mentality. okay, so I feel anything else you want to throw up?
I think we got a pretty healthy board here.
Yeah, we do.
We do. We have a super okay. healthy board.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll start crossing things off the list.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Who is to blame for the Karluk disaster? Poor planning. Captain Robert Bartlett, New Land or Bust, Capitalism, Story Seekers, The Carluck, Wrong Tool for the Wrong Job, Vijalimir Stefansson, No Chill, Greed, Geographical Fantasy, Humans Getting Handsy, Look With Your Eyes, Not With Your Hands, that's the same one, Negligence / Lack of Care for Employees, Inexperienced Crew, Curiosity Tax, Lack of Basic Training, Rush Job / Must the Show Go On?
Question mark.
And the Canadian government.
I also want to do men-tality.
Okay.
I'm really blown away. I'll never
unsee that.
Unsee that, yeah.
I know.
This is, I'm shook to my core. What can we start crossing off here? No Chill, maybe? Because I feel like that can fold into the...
Story Seekers.
Yes, exactly.
New Land or Bust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lack of Netflix.
Like, what is it? What do you think it was the more sort of the bigger driver? Do you think it was the Story Seekers or the New Land or Bust? Do you think it was curiosity about... like science, or do you think it was like the thrill of adventure? Like,
I
that
think
to
it's
me
more
is a,
story seekers.
Okay.
Really?
So that's more to blame.
Well, because I think it depends on who's your what perspective. I'm sure from the Canadian government's perspective, it was all about let's get that new land.
Let's get that money.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think the people who were running, they were trying to get, they're the ones who went to the Canadian government to be like, give me the money for this. Trust me, it's gonna be
huge
good
for you. Yeah.
But then personally, they're just like, oh, just load up the boat. Grab whatever boat you can find.
Yeah, whatever piece of crap.
Yeah. Is it cheap? Can we afford it? Just get it.
It's fine.
Yeah. How much do these people want to expect to get paid? 10 pounds? Oh, okay. Whoever.
Sure. So then that goes back to Story Seekers too, because even the captain and stuff were saying this is going to be a great opportunity to write my new book, which is like. Fame, hero, capitalism, all kind of mixed into like this story secret mentality.
Fame. Maybe we should have put fame up on the board here. Story secret.
I feel like fame and story secret.
Yeah,
is kind
that's
of
true.
Like
so we'll keep story seekers keep story up seekers. On there.
Okay.
And maybe we can.
So New Land or Bust,
the,
we
like,
should get rid of.
Yes.
I feel like you can take off the car look because, like, it's not the boat itself. Like there were other boats, and
yeah,
that boat
they
did
picked
fine.
The boat.
It was retired. That boat was retired, so it had gone on its expeditions,
right? And in that sense, we could. It's more than just using the wrong tool for the wrong job. It's more of like a lack of caring.
Mm. Oh yeah,
for
faux show.
So we'll take that off. Poor planning. That's
true. I mean,
but that does fold into a rush job. You can't plan properly if you're trying to go fast.
Yeah,
you need time.
I kind of like rush job. And I would also say the Canadian government folds more into rush job because it was sort of the Canadian government dangling that money and that deadline or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
And it was the choice to go with it. The Canadian government didn't force their hand there. It was this.
Right.
No, they just incentivized them by offering more money if they left at a certain date. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, the inexperienced crew, like it wasn't their fault that they were inexperienced.
No, they're inexperienced because it was a rush job.
Right.
And their lack of basic training you can throw out too then because that was rush job. They didn't have time for that.
Yeah, I think it's more of a lack of care for your employees.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I agree.
That was a lack of care all around.
Yes. Even like they said, what that excerpt that you were reading where it's like the crew's safety is take second seat to the mission. So basically it's like you're telling people you are less important than this land that we're not sure.
And what's crazy is that people are like, yeah, I know. That's fine.
Right. They were probably like, well, it's a job. What else am I doing?
It's a job. Yeah, what else? It's going to be fun. I'm going to have a good time.
Oh, my God. Mentality.
Men. Mentality.
What is wrong with you mentalities?
Well, I don't know how to explain it, but like we're really like, we just want to see what's out there, you know?
Get some mentality on there. Now,
What about geographical fantasy?
Yeah, I feel like.
Does that fall under under story seekers?
Yes. Good call. Good call. Okay. Humans getting handsy is pretty good, actually. Greed. I feel like this is not so much greed as much as it is.
Yeah, no, this is ego.
There's a dash of greed in here. Yeah. There's a dash, but it's not the main storyline.
No. The curiosity tax. I really do like that.
I like that term.
Me too.
We should reincorporate that whenever we can.
But I don't think that that's what's happening here.
Do we want to say Bartlett? I mean, Bartlett, how do we want to address that?
Oh, I'm not taking him off the list.
Capitalism, again, you can take off. That was sort of greed, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Rush job, got to stay on there. Negligence, got to stay on there. Okay, so this is what we've got so far for our listeners. We've got the captain, Bartlett, story seekers, expedition leader, Stephenson, humans getting handsy / look with your eyes, not with your hands. love. Negligence / lack of care for employees. Rush job / must the show go on? And mentality.
So here's the big question in regards to Bartlett, Stephenson, and what I would say is like the conversation around negligence or lack of care for employees. Does one of them take precedent over the other? Like, is it one of these dudes' lack of care or negligence, or do we feel like it was the negligence was kind of...
I feel like something that's been contested is like, whose fault was it? Was it more Bartlett? Was it more Stephenson? And like, they're passing the buck, you know, and trying to blame the other person. And people are trying to get to the bottom of that, where I just feel like it was both of them.
Sure.
You can't, you know, I think we're wasting energy trying to figure out
who's more to blame.
Who's more to blame. It looks like it was a combo.
Sure. Okay.
Now the thing is, what are we, I mean, just the idea of humans getting handsy again, I feel like that's different. Story seeking is different than humans getting handsy, like gimme. Mm-hmm. So maybe we take humans getting handsy off of this because that has more of a greed element to it.
Sure.
Like,
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Look with your eyes, not with your hands. Like, don't touch.
Yeah, I mean,
it's what they tell people at strip clubs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just thinking of like stores, but sure. Stores with like glass.
A fine china shop.
Yeah. But okay, Chris, for sure.
It's true.
Yeah, it seems like there's more to it than just like wanting to touch Fine. A beautiful thing. Do you know what I mean?
What?
This expedition seems more like, yeah, there's a little bit more, like there's dashes of greed and capitalism and, you know, heroism and like opportunism. Like there's more to it than just like, oh, that's a pretty thing I want to touch and ruin.
Yeah. I want to touch and ruin. Oh, mentality. Mm-hmm. Negligence, lack of care of for their employees. That goes back to... the
Stephenson
captain.
And Bartlett.
Yeah, I think so.
So do we roll that into these two guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
And a rush job. I think that's got to. Now, does mentality fall into rush job or story seekers, or do they fall into mentality? They fold into that. I mean, I'm obsessed with this new term.
Yeah, but the only problem is that women have a thrill seeking side to them too. So it's not just men.
That's true.
Women have it. Mm-hmm. There are adventurous women.
Hmm. Mm.
So it's not. You know what I'm saying? Can't just say get dudes. Can't just go with.
I'm
dudes
just saying
here.
Lack of diversity. If it's just one mentality, you know what I mean?
Sure. Sure.
It doesn't feel right for this one, but when does it? It should feel right for this one because it's just a bunch of dudes and a seamstress.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening?
Yeah, it seems like if it wasn't such a rush job and there was if safety, I mean, because now I feel like the captain's job is first and foremost is the safety of everyone on the ship, yeah. not the safety of the ship itself, but the people mm-hmm. on board. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it feels like if we were in that mentality where it's safety first and we are actually taking the time to properly plan and we're, you know, taking account of multiple voices and experience in the room, then that would be, I just died.
That's negligence, I think. So that's folding rush job into negligence. Mm-hmm. So I here's what I'm thinking. I think we send Stephenson and Bartlett, negligence on the part of Stephenson and Bartlett, to the alarmist jail.
Okay.
Their negligence. Mm. And we slap. Am I really going to slap story seekers?
What about rush job as a slap? To me, that plays into so many of the mistakes. I mean, that can play into the mistake of choosing the Karluk itself. It plays into the mistake of the lack of training. It plays in the mistake of bad planning.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe then we can slap mentality.
Well, no, I was just advocating for rush job.
I know, but now I'm advocating for mentality. Just because that to me is like, if you tell me like, okay, we got to go in a week to whatever, we got to go to New York in a week, in an hour, and we got to buy a car. I'm just going to be like, why do we need to go to New York in an hour?
Right. Why can't we?
I just have a bunch of questions here.
Sure.
So you're suggesting I'm just
I guess that in that story or in that scenario, I'm assuming that you need to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is that like, are you suggesting that women don't rush? I guess is that that's my question.
That's true.
Or that there are no men who have reservations about
pace themselves.
I would throw myself in the camp of I'd be like, just a few questions.
Well, that's why I like to travel with you. And in all fairness, Chris is very good at traveling as well. He would never do that.
No.
So then maybe we do fold mentality into a rush job, right?
Yeah. Okay. And then we slap rush job. That feels good to me. Okay. I'm going to call it rush job. You're getting the big slap. Negligence on the part of Stephenson and Bartlett. You're going to the alarmist jail. I guess really what we're sending to the alarmist jail is Bartlett and Stephenson, and the charge, what they've been charged with, is negligence. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's true. Yes. It's more of a, yeah, and what we'll do in there as we have been slowly transitioning to a more of a rehabilitation center, right, as opposed to a jail, mm-hmm. is we'll put them in, you know, negligence training, and we'll try and identify what their blind spots are when it comes to their negligences.
Mm. Okay. So we're going to teach them how to make a to-do list. We're going to take...
Yes.
We're going to give we have a whole course on scheduling.
You know, my first tip, I've said this on The Alarmist before, is the first tip of make your to-do list, start with make a to-do list. Then once you finish, you can cross that off. It's such a good feeling. And that's what I'll tell Bartlett and Stephenson.
Okay. So Chris is teaching that class.
I need some time to think of my class. I'll get back to you.
Yeah. Mine is scheduling.
I love that. I love you're not rushing that decision, Clayton. We're already learning.
I'm going to think about what they might need the most and then I'll. Yeah.
No mm-hmm. rush job. No rush job here.
I'm going to mm-hmm. teach them how to pick out a good planner. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's good. Get some good pens.
Remember when we had planners? Now we just have an iCal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was obsessed with planners growing up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you us for joining us today.
This has been a great voyage to uncharted territories.
Yes.
It's true. We learned about a disaster we had no clue about before this. So, thank you. I guess I'll thank the Alarmy for joining us on this journey.
Yes. Thank you, Alarmy.
And tune in next week. We are going to be discussing the Jonestown cult massacre.
I
after the Karlik disaster, while Captain Bartlett was initially celebrated by the press and public for his heroic leadership, with several survivors crediting him with saving their lives, he was later criticized for agreeing to take the Karlik into the Arctic and for allowing the group of four to travel on their own. Six first-hand accounts have been published about the failed voyage, including books by Captain Bartlett and explorer Stephenson. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at Alarmist The. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with fact-checking by Chris Smith and editing by Molly Hockey. Additional writing by Anastasia Kousakis. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Alex Paul. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith and the Erios Network. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Jonestown Cult Massacre.
Erios. Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.